Guaso, bro.
Ay.
There's not a rule that you have to use the three subs.
He's the best left back in Canada, without a doubt.
And hello everybody, welcome back to episode 92 of the Third Sub Podcast, presented by Macy Sports. I'm your co-host Alexander Gongi-Ruzic, joined as usual by Samuel Rowan to chat all things Vancouver Whitecaps ahead of another busy weekend and week beyond of Vancouver Whitecaps MLS games. Sam, how are you doing this week? And got lots to dive into in this episode, so it's gonna be a good one.
Yeah, I'm doing great. I always get up for all-Canadian matchups, and I feel like there's some really interesting things both in terms of the team overall for Montreal and then individual players, some Canadians, you know, some local guys from the West Coast. I'm excited for this one, and we had a really good guest on to preview it, so yeah, looking forward to it.
Yeah, so without further ado, we'll jump into that now. We've got a special guest, Hattie Raphael, from over in Montreal, with Culture Soccer and a myriad of other outlets that we'll present at the beginning of our chat. But fantastic guy, fun to talk to, very knowledgeable, follows the team very closely, is always in the pressers, knows what's going on, has a good pulse. So it's fantastic to chat with him. So without further ado, we'll lead off with that before diving into the rest of our Whitecaps chatter. And all right, we're joined by a very special guest to chat all things CF Montreal. I don't want to be like Mark DeSantos and say Montreal Impact, even though we might say it once or twice this episode, but Hattie Raphael of Culture Soccer, a website covering all things North American soccer in French, and also co-host of the Ball is Round podcast, and also some other podcasts in French, including CS Adérable and Culture Soccer. So, I mean, Hattie, thanks for joining us. You're a busy guy, so we're happy to be able to lock you down for a half hour today.
Thanks a lot for inviting me, guys. It's really a pleasure. And yes, you don't need to talk about all my projects, because we're going to be here for a while, right? So I have quite a few podcasts that I host. But I would, of course, suggest you to listen to The Ball is Round. It's in English, and we talk about CF Montreal and all things around the soccer world, of course.
We'll dive right into it we'll talk about CF Montreal, Vancouver Whitecaps, a lot to talk about. Before we talk about the game itself, though, Montreal's off to a strong start of the season. No one except Montreal expected a strong start to the season. Do you say it's fair to say it's a stronger start than expected, or is this pretty much where you expected the team to be at after three games?
Listen, it all depends on expectations, right? And unfortunately, our expectations in Montreal have been pretty low in the past few seasons. So yeah, we are surprised. We are surprised to see them do so well, to be unbeaten after three games and playing against, it wasn't weak teams. We played against Toronto, we played against Nashville, and we played against Columbus. Yes, Toronto was diminished. Yes, Columbus played CCL, but it's still big clubs, and we were able to grab some points, and that's really impressive. I think knowing that most of our team is composed of a lot of new players, and knowing that we have a new coach at the helm.
I guess just diving into some of those performances, you got a high-scoring affair on opening day against TFC. Then you've got kind of a tale of two halves against Nashville. And then a really low-scoring affair, obviously no goals scored against the Columbus Crew. But I thought, from what I saw at least, like a pretty impressive team performance. It's three very different matches in the way they played out. How do you kind of break those three down and try to like pick out themes to evaluate when it's kind of been so mixed in terms of the way the games have gone?
Listen, it's been very hard, because don't forget that with the whole pandemic situation in Montreal, it's the same thing in Vancouver, obviously, with Canadian teams not being able to play a lot of preseason games. And like I said, it's the same thing for Vancouver. We only played two preseason games. It's not enough. And we've seen right now a team that's in preseason mode, right? And it's not, it's never really just, right? It's never really, it's not a complete product on the field. And that's what we're seeing right now. And that's why you see so many differences from one game to another. Now, we've seen progress, and that's what's really nice about it. You talked about the Toronto game. Toronto game was, you know, it's another kind of game, right? You know, it's your rivals. It's like your number one rivals, and it's a different kind of game. So you're always going to be, you know, amped up and ready to fight, right? But then you see Nashville, where, you know, it showed that we were in a preseason mode, and now in Columbus, it seems that we're coming to close to what the final product is going to be, which is very encouraging.
Well, we'll talk about that final product in a bit, but we wanted, obviously, there's a few individuals we have to talk about. And yeah, first of all, we'll start with one of the new arrivals, Jordy Mihailovic, very highly rated in MLS. You know, Montreal needed a number 10 last year. Wasn't the conventional way to get it, but they dropped a decent boatload of funny MLS money to bring him in. How important has he been for Montreal's attack to start the year? And how has bringing him in changed necessarily from last year? Because Montreal last year, they had a lot of the same attacking, you know, the strikers, Kyoto, Toy, etc., but they struggled to score goals. How important has Mihailovic been for kind of linking everything together?
Listen, I think we have the same syndrome in Vancouver and then in Montreal. We've been looking for a number 10 for a number of years. We finally have him. Sorry, guys, but we have to say that we have him. You don't, but we have him with Jordy Mihailovic. We have him with Jordy Mihailovic. Listen, I'm someone that really follows the MLS, and I watch a lot of games every week. I can say about 7 to 8 games, MLS games every week. And I can tell you that Jordy Mihailovic has been a guy that I've been following and that I really wanted to see play. And unfortunately, in Chicago, he never had his chance. And when he had his chance, he wasn't played at the right position. He was really put on the wing. That's not really his style of play. And I was so happy that we got him in Montreal, because I knew that in Montreal, he was going to play in this exact position as a number 10, because that's what he really is. Yes, he can play a bit as an 8, as a box-to-box midfielder, but he's a lot better as a number 10. And this guy has been wonderful for us. Yeah, all the attacks have been going through him. He's been running like crazy on the pitch, which is good in some ways, not really good in others. But he has a lot to learn still. He's still a young guy. He has a lot of potential, like most of the players in our team. But it's exciting. It's exciting to be able to see someone that's able to create out of thin air, able to give that final pass that will really give a one-on-one for your strikers, that's able to, you know, spread the ball on the wings in order to have crosses come to our strikers. We see Kyoto, we see the new guy, Bjorn Johnson. So it's interesting to have that kind of guy, you know, being the mastermind of your midfield, right? So we have high expectations on Jordy Mihailovic, and as of right now, he's been pretty great.
I guess just to follow up on Mihailovic, one thing that really stood out to me from what I saw so far is, for a number 10, the defensive work rate and the willingness to, you know, get stuck in, getting some interceptions and kind of turning play on his own was really impressive. But I'm curious, for, you know, people in Vancouver listening, what was the process like through the media and like what you saw in terms of being able to kind of win the sweepstakes for him, bring him in? And it was an interesting structure to the deal. I think it was a certain amount of general allocation money over a number of years. So like, what was that whole process like? And was it, I mean, it seems like a good financial deal for the club, but maybe you can add your 2 cents on that.
Listen, yes, it's expensive, but it's Garber bucks, right? 800,000 of Garber bucks. We don't really care about it, right? No, I'm joking. No, but in Montreal, and I'm sure it's the same thing in Vancouver, you know, people that really follow the team, I would say the average Joes that really follow the team, don't really look at what's happening outside of their club, right? They don't really know what's going on. You know, in the other conference, they don't know anything. But in the same conference, they just know a bit, because they only watch the games of, you know, that Montreal play against, right? So they don't really have a lot of knowledge. So because this is how it is in North America, right? You don't really cover the league, you cover the team, right? So this is how media works here. The thing is, they didn't really know what kind of player Georgi Mihailovic was. And the first reflex that you get is you go on Transfer Market or whatever website you use, FBrief or whatever it is, and you try to get to see the stats because it's a number 10. He's supposed to get you stats. And they look at the stats and it was like, I'm not sure and everything. Thank God there are a few guys from the media that have followed Georgi Mihailovic. And they were really, trying to pull him up, saying, you know what, it's a good signing. Yes, it's a bit expensive, but the potential that he has is really interesting. So it was a bit of mixed emotions when we got Georgi Mihailovic. First, yes, it was expensive. We've seen our fair share of bad acquisitions down the years. So everybody really was afraid to have another Ontivero or another Vargas or another really flop that we've had in the past few years. But as of right now, it's been pretty good. And I think that everybody's seeing the potential that this guy has.
Well, we won't mention Omar Brown either if you want to talk about him.
Oh, man, please. But he's a winger, right? He's not – yeah, but most of them were wingers. You're right. Yeah, Omar Brown.
We'll talk about one wide player, though, and it's in particular, and it's one that Vancouver fans will know, Zachary Beauguillard. I mean, last year, Sam can talk about it as well. When he was in Vancouver, he had a man-of-the-match performance. And to start the year, he's been electric, which from Canada's perspective, having him and Richie Larea, fantastic battle. It's going to be great to see. But from Montreal, they brought him. They still had Zachary Sagna. He's quickly, grown into the role with Sagna retired. What to make of his strong play so far? And also as a follow-up, is he going to be fit for Vancouver this week? Because obviously he got taken off early. I don't know if Wilfred Nancy's given you guys an update, but what to make of Broguiara? Is he going to be fit for the Whitecaps?
Listen, Nancy didn't want to give us a precise update. He gave us an update, but not really a precise one. He said that it wasn't really, he didn't get injured very badly, that the injury is not really, important. So that's all he said. He didn't say that if he's going to be available or anything, but I have a feeling that he is going to be available. Or at least he's going to be on the bench, if not in the starting 11. Now, yes, and I agree with you, he's been really, really fantastic this year, offensively, for sure. So we've seen him in the first game. He was the man of the match. He was really amazing against Toronto. In the second game against Nashville, he was pretty good offensively. Defensively, I think the two goals come from his side. So it was a bit, he leaves a big hole behind because he goes really a lot forward. So you really have to make sure that he gets the proper coverage, behind him, that the central defender really covers the space behind him. That's the most important part of that 3-5-2 that Montreal is using right now. But Zachary Beauguillard is really an amazing player, and he's grown so much. Now in Montreal, people are not really 100% convinced. They are convinced by his offensive capabilities, but a lot of people say that he has reached a ceiling and he's not going to improve more. I'm not one of those. I think he is going to improve. I think that the 3-5-2 really suits his abilities, and he's going to get better and better. But yeah, I hope he's going to be available against Vancouver because we're going to need him. We're really going to need him. And, Montreal has got a lot of new recruits, but on the right side of the field as a right wing back, we only have Zachary Beauguillard and Clément Bayard. We only have two players. On all the other positions, we have at least three or four players that can take, that can really perform in the other positions. It's just that in that right back situation or a right wing back situation, It's thinner. It's really thinner. So let's hope Beauguillard will be available.
Well, a quick follow-up on that, since we're talking about the space behind, and maybe it's kind of relevant for some of the questions we have after, because we'll talk about the left center backs in a bit. Obviously, Louis Binks, when he's healthy, we know what he can do. Kamal Miller, we'll talk about him in a second. But at the right center back, it's kind of been, touch and go. Rudy Camacho, at least Vancouver fans probably won't have the best impression of him after last year. Joel Waterman, obviously from a Vancouver perspective, he's from here. We're rooting for him. He's a local boy. a lot of, you know, he's struggled a bit with pace, with taking guys on. Is that an issue necessarily, that right-hand center back side? What do you make of that battle between Joel Waterman and Rudy Camacho? And how do they deal with that, knowing that, okay, they're going to be a lot of space? Do you worry that teams are going to start to target that now and try to attack Montreal through that space?
They've been targeting the Montreal in that space. So we've seen it against Toronto, where it was Joel Waterman that was taking that position. And unfortunately, he was a bit too slow on a couple of occasions. He caused the penalty and it didn't really go well for him. And unfortunately, or fortunately, both of them, Wilfried Nancy removed him from the starting 11 after that first game against Toronto. And Kiki Struna took his place. Camacho has been playing in the middle of the three-man defense, so not on the right like it was before and like we've seen against the Whitecaps last year. So he was playing really in the middle of three-man defense. It's Kiki Struna in the last two games have been playing as the right central defender of that three-man defense. First game for Kiki Struna, it was really difficult. Because, you know, he's really a tall guy and it seemed that he wasn't really ready. He wasn't match fit. He lacked in not only speed, but even speed in his way of thinking. And he wasn't really fast on his feet and not really covering that space in behind Zachary Broguiar. But against Columbus, he had a really good game. And that was one of my questions in the presser. And I asked Kiki Struna and I was like, do you prefer playing in a back four or in a back three? So back four with two central defenders or back three with three central defenders. And he told me, I played in a back three for 5 years in Italy and I loved it. And for me, it's really the system that I really like the most. I was surprised because I wasn't expecting that. I thought that he was going to be better in a four-man defense, but he said he's a lot better in a three-man defense. So let's see how that evolves, because right now he had one good game and one bad game. We'll see against Vancouver if he's going to have a good game or not.
There's a lot of interesting points in terms of the defensive lineup there from thoughts on Broguiar, which I think, you know, on the West Coast here in our somewhat limited exposure, I think he's rated very, very positively. And then in terms of the back three, yeah, we kind of already got into a lot of things I saw from the matches where it kind of feels like the wingbacks, to some extent, make or break the match for Montreal, yeah. Right? They can really create and they can combine with Mihailovic, or they can leave those center backs exposed. But that's interesting if maybe... Do you think it's fair to say that they're just shaking off some rust in terms of like dialing in that back three, and that the Columbus Crew match was a sign of a step in the right direction?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Because we've seen so much progression, in the offensive sector, but also in the defensive sector. We've seen them really improve, close the gaps, playing compact when they needed to, spreading out when they needed to. They've been really, really, really good against Columbus. Now, yes, Columbus team was, I wouldn't say the B team, but like, you know, kind of the B team. So I can't wait to see them, you know, play a game against, you know, the A team of any franchise in the MLS. I know that you guys in the Whitecaps, you're far from having your A team. So I don't know if it's going to be against the Whitecaps that we're going to be able to see if they really progressed or if we're going to have to wait for an extra week or not.
Definitely not against the Whitecaps midfield right now. Definitely won't be first choice, but enough about that. I mean, lastly on the defense, as we could talk about the defense all day, we'll talk about two players in one question. I mentioned both of them before, Kamal Miller and Louis Binks. First, we'll talk about Kamal Miller because brought in for very cheap, fantastic deal. He's been, like, for me, he's probably been one of my favorite players to watch this season. He's been fantastic. So how big has Kamal Miller been for Montreal? And then I guess as a follow-up, where does Louis Binks fit in now? Because I would have thought in a back three, he takes Kamal Miller's spot. But does he go in the middle now for Camacho and it's with Struna? Or where does Binks go when he's fit?
That's the million-dollar question, right? Where do you fit Louis Binks? Because he's going to be in the starting 11 for sure. Right? Yeah. When he comes back, we don't know how long it's going to take because he's still injured. I doubt it very much that he's going to be available for the Whitecaps. I'm pretty sure he's out, even if Wilfried Nancy didn't confirm it, unfortunately. But let's talk about Kamal Miller first, if you don't mind, because for me, you know me, Alex, you and also Sam, you both follow me and you know how much I love that player, okay? This player, I've been following him for a while because at Culture Soccer, we follow the NCAA, so we follow college soccer, and we have an expert in the college soccer that really, before the draft, told me, please keep an eye on Kamal Miller, because Kamal Miller is really a very good defender. So since that time, in 2019, before the Super Draft, I was really looking forward to see him in action, because I don't really watch a lot of college soccer. I don't watch any college soccer at all, to be honest. But I was really looking forward to see Kamal Miller. And we've seen him in 2019 with Orlando. He was amazing in a back three with O'Connor in Orlando City. And then, unfortunately, with Oscar Pereja, he lost his place. So when he signed in Montreal, I, like, lost it. For me, Kamal Miller was a great addition to the back line of Montreal. And you know what? He's really lived up to my expectations. And he's been so good in that back three. If you go see the man of the match of the supporters after the games in Montreal, most of the time, one of the players that really comes up in the last three games, it was Kamal Miller as the man of the match, because he's been instrumental. He's been awesome in all three of the games. So we're very happy to have acquired Kamal Miller. Now for Louis Binks, when he comes back, what can we do? Unfortunately, I don't think he'll take the place of Kamal Miller. Unless Kamal Miller will, when Kamal Miller is going to be called up by Canada, because he's going to be called up, that's for sure. So maybe Binks will slot into that, left center back position. But then what do we do with Binks? I have a feeling that he'll be in the middle of that three-man defense, and maybe he'll push Rudy Camacho on the right or Rudy Camacho on the bench with Kiki Struna staying as a right center back. I think that the big fight would be between Camacho and Kiki Struna for that third place, but Kamal Miller and Louis Binks are starters 100% of the time.
Yeah, that's I like those two as you know, any part of whether it's a back four or a back three, that those are two good defenders to have. And certainly, I've mentioned it far too often on a show that's about the Whitecaps, but Louis Binks is one of my favorite defenders in MLS. I don't know why. I just love watching him play. But I guess kind of rounding out the position groups on CF Montreal, the striker partnership, two up front. We've seen a little bit of E-Money, got a start last week, but Mason Toy and Romel Kyoto, how have those guys been so far? And you can correct me if I'm wrong, but was Toy out because of injury last match? And is there any update there?
Yes, there is an update on Mason Toy. Yes, he was out due to injury. He's not going to be ready for Vancouver, so he's out already. So
That's a shame.
It's a shame for us, but not for you guys, right? So he's been awesome every time he played. He scored two goals, two amazing goals, by the way. The partnership between them was pretty good. And you know, Alex said it before I think it's you, Sam, that said it before, that the system of CF Montreal really goes down the wings. So the two wingbacks are very important in that system. Unfortunately, we don't see a lot yet of a partnership between the two strikers. We haven't seen them really link up. And I think that this is something that we need to progress on as a team. Looking at the last game against Columbus, if you go see and you see the passing map of the game, between Kyoto and Hurtado, there wasn't any pass between them together. So that was a bit shocking, even if we dominated the game. So, the partnership there is still something to work on, but I like our chances. It seems promising because if individually they're able to do something, I'm pretty sure when two players are pretty good and are confident in their chances and in their abilities, I'm sure they're going to find each other pretty easily. They just need to have a bit more matches, a bit more game time together, and then I'm sure they'll find a solution and they'll find themselves pretty easily.
I guess just as a quick follow-up there, with Toy out of the lineup, would you anticipate another start for Erik Hurtado, or could Bjørn Johnsen get into the starting lineup and maybe start up top?
Listen, Bjørn Johnsen, as of right now, has been a disappointment, okay? It's too early to say that he's bad or he's not good or anything, but, you know, he played the three games. He played about 20 minutes in each one, or, you know, approximately 20 minutes. I don't remember exactly how many minutes he played in each game, but he was a sub on all three games, and he looked slow and he looked really not fit. It was very, very hard for him on the pitch. Now, I think that because he's a tall guy, and you guys know when you're really tall, it takes a bit more time for you to be in game shape, because physically it's a bit harder to be really fit. So I think it's going to take a bit of time for him to find find his shape and to find really his form. So I don't think he's ready to be in the starting 11. But if Wilfried Nancy wants a target man up front, then it would be very interesting to have Bjørn Johnsen. So it all depends on how Wilfried Nancy wants to play tactically. And that's what's really fun in Montreal. You have so many profiles, so many different types of players in that squad that you can play any way you want. And that's for me, it's a coach's dream, right? It's amazing to have so many options. And again, I'm sorry, guys. I know that you're having so many difficulties with injuries, so I'm not really. It's not really fun for you to hear all that, but it's true. In Montreal, we're pretty lucky right now with our squad.
Well, we'll talk about Wilfried Nancy. It's perfect that you brought him up. We want to talk about him because, I mean, on one sense, it was global news that Montreal signed Thierry Henry. It was also equally as global news when he left, surprisingly, before the start of the season. You know, at least Wilfried Nancy maintained a bit of what Henry had built. He's been in Montreal for, what, 4 or 5 plus years now. He's been there for a while. What to make of his start to life in Montreal? What to make of him? And, you know, how are people receiving him? From what I've seen online, he seems to be a very popular guy. He seems to be a likable guy. How are people, you know, taking to this? Because obviously it's easy to be disappointed when you lose a legend like Thierry Henry and whatnot. But, you know, it appears Wilfried Nancy might arguably have been more perfect for this job, and he appears to be doing a good job. So I'm curious to hear your thoughts on all that.
Listen, right now we have positive results, right? So, of course, there's no bad press around Nancy. There's really any, you can't really say anything to Wilfried Nancy. Looking at the squad that's completely new, like I said, like most of our squad, more than 50% of the squad are new players. Looking at the fact, and we're going to talk about it later, looking at the fact of, the predictions of the pundits, and looking at the bad press that Montreal received even before we kicked the ball for the first time. You know, people are surprised, and there's a positive vibe around the team and around Nancy. And as a journalist in the media, going to pressers, it's been a really breath of fresh air having Wilfried Nancy, because we all know how Thierry Henry is, right? So at pressers, he's a bit moody. He doesn't like to speak too much. He gets a bit arrogant sometimes, even if he's a legend. It's not very easy for the media usually with Thierry Henry. He doesn't really like media. He's very wary of the media, and it shows, right? So the atmosphere was a bit heavy when Thierry Henry was here, even if we all respect him as a player, as a legend, of course, of the game. Now, with Wilfried Nancy, it's been very, very welcoming, and he's been very good with the press. He's been tactically on the field. We've seen some good things from him. He's been managing the squad in the right way because he's getting results, right? So I can't wait to see how he's going to react when we're going to have one loss or two losses in a row, because it's going to happen, at one point during the season. And that's when we're going to be able to really judge Wilfried Nancy. Right now, it's too early. There's too many positive things going around to really rate and really judge Wilfried Nancy on what we've seen. But as of today, it's really positive. Everybody's on the Nancy bandwagon and really following him and really rooting for him, because even if he's French, he's been here for about 8 years with the CF Montreal. He's, I think, married to a Quebecer. So yeah, it's someone that really is here to stay, right? And that's why Quebecers are really happy to be behind Wilfried Nancy.
Yeah, so you kind of led us into this question, and you've pointed out, you know, how things are feeling pretty positive through three matches. But if we kind of go back to prior to the season, you know, you're on. I remember watching opening day in MLS, and they're putting CF Montreal dead last in the East. I think Vancouver was dead last in the West, and Montreal was dead last in the East, and I just had to laugh. But there were a lot of people, especially even more so than Vancouver for once, that were picking Montreal to finish right at the bottom of the Eastern Conference. What was the feeling like in the city, whether it's amongst media, whether it's amongst supporters? Did they feel the same way, or was there a bit of a disconnect and, you know, fans feeling like disrespected, or that the, you know, kind of how did the feeling in the city match what people were predicting going into this year?
Of course, you can't really get one answer to that question, yeah, because you have so many different people that really feel differently about Montreal right now. And we're going to talk about it because of the whole rebranding situation. Unfortunately, there are a lot of people that are really negative and that thought that even Joey Saputo was going to sell the club. And, you know, there's a lot of negativism around the club. Okay, so that's the first thing. But when people that are neutral about the rebrand and really neutral and fans or even media, when we saw that, we were a bit surprised. And I tried to really dig a bit further and to go see what was the base of those predictions, and I in my opinion it was just laziness.
Is it the Thierry Henry effect? Just the fact that a legend of the game left the club, just automatically they throw out some, oh, this is going to be a disaster now.
No, it's about
just lack of research done, basically.
It's about the DPs. Guys, you all know MLS, right? MLS, it's all about showtime. It's all about names. It's all about, I have Carlos Vela. Ooh, I'm amazing. I'm the best team in the MLS, right? This is MLS. You go, you get the first team, the best team of the season. If you go see the starting 11, there's only one defender or two defenders, and it's only you know, attacking midfielders in the All-Star. You only see 7 attacking midfielders, and you're like, okay, where's the defensive midfielder? How come Diego Chara never got into the All-Star? You know, so MLS is all about that, all about showtime. And unfortunately, if you look at the squad of CF Montreal, the only name that really stands out from the soccer world point of view is Victor Wanyama. And he's a defensive midfielder. For the rest, they don't really know them. So for them, it was very easy. They have 27 teams to watch and to have predictions on. So for them, looking at the names, they look at the squad, they see that there's no names they really recognize. So for them, it's simple. They're 27th. So in my opinion, it's really laziness. Not really going. They didn't really go deep into their research while researching CF Montreal. In my opinion, I was at a training session. The preseason camp that happened here in Montreal. I was there every day for a couple of weeks, and I know it's pretty early in the season and you can't really analyze at that point because, you know, it's only the first 2 weeks of preseason, but there was a vibe around that team that seemed positive. And I've seen some good things, even if we can't really project ourselves too far, just with the two first week of training camp. But it seemed that like things were fitting. Things were really going smooth between the players on the pitch. And I was surprised to see that the predictions of the MLS. I think there was about 9 guys that really predicted, and 7 of them said that we were going to be last in the Eastern Conference, and 2 of them said we were going to be 13th out of 14th. So I don't know. For me, it's laziness. I can't really understand it more than that, because if you look at the squads in the Eastern Conference, I don't understand how Chicago and Cincinnati can be you know, considered better than us, even if Cincinnati paid $15 million for a striker. You know, one player doesn't make a team, right?
Well, let's just say the Vancouver and Montrealers will unite over the fact that they don't really like reading MLSsoccer.com too much recent days, especially if we're going to talk about power rankings and all that stuff. Oh, boy. I think the Whitecaps got a phrase on last week's power rankings, which is like they conceded a nice free kick. Like,
okay, yeah, yeah, like, exactly. I read that.
It's like you guys get paid to analyze.
No. Well, they get paid to have clicks. That's all. Well, it's as simple as that.
Yeah, apparently.
And it works. That's the worst thing. That it works.
Well, because everyone gets all riled up, and then everyone talks about it, and it's boom. It's cha-ching. It's the dollar eyes. But maybe we'll talk quickly about something that necessarily some people from Montreal and Vancouver don't necessarily see eye to eye about, is the rivalry, because. You know, it really depends what generation you're from or whatnot. Because I know a lot of Vancouver fans who've been around since the USL days, they hate Montreal. They boycott Saputo still. They see Montreal, they get blood boiling in their veins. Then you got the newer generation of fans. They see Montreal. For them, it's just, you know, another game. For you, from your perspective, what do you think of the Montreal-Vancouver rivalry? Obviously, it's not, you know, le classique. It's not Toronto-Montreal. There's not the same political history there. It's not as... You know, it's not as big, but do you still think there's still a rivalry? And what are your thoughts on the rivalry? And how important was last year for that? The red cards, the bad blood. Do you think that'll carry over into this year's games?
I think there's always a rivalry between Canadian teams. That's for sure, because you want to be the best in Canada. It's our country. Yes, we are playing in the American League, but we are still Canadian. So for us. And we asked Samuel Piet today at the presser, or yesterday at the presser, and he told us maybe the rivalry is not as strong against Toronto, against Vancouver than against Toronto. But whenever I look at the standings, I want to make sure that that Montreal is the best Canadian team in the standings. So there is a bit of a rivalry. Unfortunately, it really faded out from, you know, the USL days, where it was really a big, 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 big rivalry. Right now it really faded out just because we don't play each other enough, right? We don't have a lot of games against each other. Thank God there's the Canadian Championship, if it ever comes back, because right now there's no Canadian Championship. And let's hope we're gonna see another Canadian Championship this year. Thank God there's the Canadian Championship. And even in the Canadian Championship in 2019, we didn't even play against each other. So even in the Canadian Championship, we're not really playing against each other. So it's been very hard to maintain some kind of rivalry. Now, in my opinion, yes, there is a rivalry, but not as strong as the rivalry against Toronto. Toronto, the only thing we think about, like, we don't really think when we're going to play against Toronto. You know, for us, it just becomes pure, I'm not going to say hate, but pure... You know, you just want them to lose anything, you know, any game they play, you just want them to lose. That's all you want as a Montreal fan, right? But it's not as hardcore against the Whitecaps. But yeah, we want to beat the Whitecaps as much as we want to beat any other team, but a bit more because they're Canadians.
And in terms of the Canadian Championship, I mean, the Vancouver Whitecaps got to figure out how to beat CPL opponents first before they can worry about MLS teams.
I didn't want to say that.
They were supposed to play Montreal in 2019 until they lost to a CPL team. So.
Anyways, yeah, we'll gloss past that and right into, it's kind of a tradition when we have a guest on, especially for a match preview. We want to flip it on its head a little bit. What do you, or what do people in Montreal think about the Vancouver Whitecaps, the, you know, kind of where they're at as an organization, how someone like Mark DeSantos is viewed as a head coach who obviously has history in the province. Yeah, curious for your thoughts. And then maybe dive into a match prediction, how you see this one going.
Wow. Okay. I have to remember the prediction that I gave yesterday in the Ball is Round, so I'm coherent, right? Because I don't want to give another...
I'll hop on and say no pressure. I'm pretty sure we had a guest on last week for Colorado, and I'm pretty sure she predicted a 1-0 for Colorado. So just saying, oh, the wow. pressure is on you for this week.
No, I do remember my prediction now. So I'm going to start with a prediction because, you know, it's going to make you look, guys, look really good, guys. For me, Vancouver is going to win 2-1. So I can, that's my opinion, because I think Montreal has to lose at one point, and I think it's going to be against the Whitecaps. And the reason why is very simple, because, and that's the first part of your question, Sam, is whenever we hear about the Whitecaps, for us, the Whitecaps are not a threat, unfortunately. They're not a threat because, you know, unfortunately, in the last few seasons, they haven't been very good. There's a lot of uncertainties on the players. We know that there's a lot of people, a lot of players missing right now. I know Ali Adnan is not here because of his visa problem. And, you know, for Montreal fans, usually when they see that they're going to play the Whitecaps, for them, it's a sure win. Not for me, but for them, it's a sure win. Or if it's not a win, it's a very big disappointment. Because they expect to beat the Whitecaps, that are a team that is really trying to build something, and they're not really there yet. Okay, that's how Montreal sees the Whitecaps. And I'm being very honest and very blunt with you guys. Okay, now, in my opinion, I think that the Whitecaps are going to be very strong this year. And that's my personal opinion, following the Whitecaps and seeing what Mark Dos Santos have been doing. If he's able to get that famous number 10 that you guys are really, really looking forward to, I'm pretty sure you're going to be a very, very dangerous team, because you have very good players. And I think that Mark Dos Santos is going to play the same kind of system that Wilfried Nancy is trying to install here in Montreal, with a lot of play with the wingbacks, with Ali Adnan and with Bruno Gaspar. So I think this is going to be very good. And with Cavallini up front, I think, and the number 10, I think you would have a really a very dangerous team. But let's wait and see for that number 10, because I think everything lies on him, right? So correct me if I'm wrong, but that's my opinion.
I think that's a lot of certainly what we've, us on the show, a lot of people in Vancouver, it's certainly, there's a lot of good individuals, which is, mm-hmm. you know, there's pieces, there's obviously a big hole linking some of your good forwards, some of your good defenders together, obviously. Sometimes coaching can be hit or miss. You got some games where Mark Dos Santos will come out and look like a genius, and then there's games like the Colorado one where he struggled from the start, struggled to make subs. So it really, yeah, I think that's pretty fair, very blunt assessment. On paper, there's a lot to like, but then again, you watch it on the field, you're like, well, why isn't it coming together? There are a lot of holes. So, you know, I think you've summed it up pretty well. And I'm curious to see about your prediction. It's very bold to come in and predict a Vancouver win. I wouldn't have blamed you for saying, you know, a draw or a Montreal win, but we'll see about that. But
it's going to be a Vancouver win. And I said it yesterday on The Ball Is Round, and everybody looked at me like, what are you saying? And I'm like, they're going to lose. They're going to lose against Vancouver. So I just hope that whatever the result is, I just hope that we're going to see you again. And you're going to be invited to my show maybe next time. And we'll talk about the Whitecaps again. Alex, you've been a guest at a lot of my podcasts. So I'm sure, you're going to be invited again to speak in French, because he does speak French, guys, if you guys don't know, and he's pretty good at it. So, yeah. So thanks again for receiving me and for that chat. I really loved it.
Yeah. Well, before you go, as you mentioned at the beginning, you're a busy guy. You got a lot going on. Shout out yourself. Where can people find you? Where can they find your work? And take all the time you need.
I'm not going to take too much time, guys. Everything, you'll see everything on my Twitter handle. So at soccer en folie, I'm going to spell it for you. So it's ENFOLIE. So you can go and follow me there. You're going to see, I share all of my content there. I'm not going to talk about everything because I do a lot, but if you follow me on the Twitter handle, you're going to be able to see everything that I do. And I love soccer. I'm a big soccer fan. I've been a fan since the beginning of the 90s. And I'm, yeah, I follow everything. A lot of French league because it's my league, even if I'm not French. And of course, Canadian, anything Lebanese because I'm Lebanese. So yeah, you'll see a lot of things. You'll see a lot of things on my Twitter handle regarding soccer.
Well, thanks so much, Hadi, and looking forward to the match this weekend.
Yeah, same here.
Have you opened up your closet with the summer soccer season just around the corner and realized that there's something growing out of your boots? Yeah, maybe it's time to get a new pair. Well, if you want to get a new pair, head over to Macy's Sports in North Vancouver, located on Brooks Bank Avenue near Lonsdale. They're your one-stop sports store for anything soccer-related. Go from boots to balls to kits, and they do field hockey. They do a lot of other sports. So if it's not just, you know, there's something going in your soccer boots, if there's something wrong with some of your other equipment, if you need something new, Macy's Sports is your destination to go there. Head over. It's a great local store. We're proud to be working with them, sponsoring local soccer, and make sure to check them out for all your local sporting needs. But on that note, we'll return to the podcast. There we have it. Our chat with Hadi Raphael of Culture Soccer, and the ball is around among Eddie, many other, you know, projects, ventures that he has going on. And as we learned there, lots going on with Montreal. His, you know, his finger is on the pulse of the team, of what's going on, and lots to dive into. So, I mean, Sam, what in particular maybe stood out from what he said for you?
Well, I was kind of happy to get some of my general inclinations about Montreal confirmed, just in terms of with the back three, the way they really try to produce through wide areas, kind of playing off Mihailovic in the middle. There's not a lot of, you know, build up centrally. They're not using those defensive central midfielders for too much creatively. And I think that makes for an interesting matchup against the Whitecaps, who are maybe weakest in that area in central midfield. So will Montreal try to switch things up to expose the Whitecaps' areas of weakness? It's not like the fullbacks, though, were terribly great against the Rapids. So I don't know, just tactically, this is going to be a really interesting one to try to break down. I like a lot of what Montreal has done in the offseason, even if, as we spoke about, it hasn't been rated highly elsewhere in the league. I'm a big fan of what they've done, and I like the way they kind of are building up their style of play. And I mean, man, if the Whitecaps could get a guy like Mihailovic in the fold, like, wouldn't that be great? Can't help but be a little bit jealous there. Yeah, excited for this one. I don't know if I'm favoring the Whitecaps for a bounce back performance, but you know, as Hadi said, maybe the dream start to the year for Montreal has to end somewhere. So the question is, you know, are they able to keep up that form? Are the Whitecaps able to bounce back? Which one is going to give in this matchup?
I guess there's a lot of good and bad for a matchup like this for the Whitecaps. There's the fact that Montreal, when they can, they sit back and they defend deep, and that the Whitecaps struggle to break down. It's hard for them to imagine breaking down a sturdy back three, let alone, you know, seeing their struggles at breaking down a back four, you know, in Colorado that had two aggressive fullbacks. Well, you know, a very solid back three with a guy like Victor Wanyama, Samuel Piet, if he's fit, sitting in front of them, that's going to be a lot of work, especially with no number 10 to kind of break through that. But maybe if, you know, Mark DeSantos, you look at that roster, this could be a chance to maybe play Christian Dahomey and Diber Caicedo a little wider than, you know, they have lately, and try to exploit that tunnel, that gap between the fullbacks and center backs that Hadi kind of spoke of, saying, okay, that, you know, sometimes Zachary Broguiar, and also he didn't mention it, but something I noticed as well, Mustafa Kiza also, they really push forward. There's a lot of space behind them. Obviously on Kamal Miller's side, the left side, it's a little harder to break through there. But especially on that Zachary Broguiar side, getting a Diber Caicedo in that channel, getting a Christian Dahomey to get in there, cause problems, get a ball to a Lucas Cavallini, that has to be an avenue to exploit for sure. Even getting your fullbacks forward in Christian Gutierrez and Jake Nowinski or Bruno Gaspar, whoever gets the nod at right back, that has to be a priority, because you know you're going to be in tough in terms of creating through the middle when they've just got solid defensive midfielders, decent center backs. There's going to be a bit of issues in terms of playing through the middle anyways, because it just sounds like Michael Baldissimo, it just doesn't sound like he's going to be fit in time to play a full game, be it as a starter or as a sub. I think he's going to be a sub just based on the fact that as of Wednesday, he hadn't trained. So we only really had Thursday and Friday to train. And Friday is usually a lighter session. I think he's going to start on the bench. Theoretically, you could put Kyle Alexandre in that role and there would be more ball progression, but who is going to play the number 10? Like, are we going to see Russell Tybert further up the field? I don't know if that's going to help your problem. I personally, if possible, I want to see Leonard Owusu slot back in. Who knows if he's going to play or not, what Mark DeSantis is going to do. So it's just looking at the Whitecaps, basically the injury woes in midfield. What could have been an easier matchup for them to exploit is going to be a lot harder. So for them, they have to absolutely prioritize the wide channels and making creating through wide areas, because if not, I could really see Montreal have a good recipe for just sitting, clogging the middle and getting an easy 3 points.
Yeah, I think you broke it down very well. I mean, Lucas Cavallini, Christian Dahomey, and David Caicedo, if they're able to attack that back three in space, I really like their chances to create something. The big question is, are they going to be able to stretch Montreal to the point where they can get those defenders in space? Are they going to be able to provide the service on the counter to those three attackers to take advantage of what's there to be had in space? With Baldissimo looking like he's on the outside looking in terms of fitness, Leo Owusu's only returned to training, so how quickly can he get back up to speed? You just don't know. Is it going to be this? If it's the same midfield three that we saw in a similar configuration to Colorado, then I think it's big trouble. I don't think the Whitecaps can create anything in that kind of setup, because, I mean, Columbus, even though it was their, you know, somewhere between their A and their B team, Columbus still has a lot of good players, and they were not able to break down Montreal at all. So unless you're able to create a second half against Nashville type dynamic attack down the wings where you can really whip a lot of crosses into the box, it could be a real struggle. A guy like Christian Gutierrez could be really called on again to attempt to do a lot of the creation. I'd like to see, if Russell Tybert's going to be in the lineup, then I'd like to see him move back to the left-hand side as opposed to playing as a central midfielder. Mark DeSantis is going to have to be in the lab, so to speak, and figure out, you know, only he knows the exact fitness of all his midfielders and how he can get the most out of them. But I think it goes without saying that something needs to change from the Rapids match. And yeah, it's just going to be that delicate balance of, yes, there is a matchup to exploit against Montreal, but does Vancouver have the tools to actually take advantage of that? And if they don't, it's going to be a struggle. And as we chatted about with Hattie, I think there are a lot of good attacking tools that CF Montreal has. So it's going to be a tall task for whoever's at the back defensively, especially if that's Ranko Vasilinovic and Andy Rose once again.
Well, I'll get ahead on this train again this week. I was a little slow on it last week, but obviously the front three isn't going to change, and that's fine. You know, we'd like to see some Theo Bear, and hopefully he comes back from, you know, the wherever Mark DeSanto sent him to and makes the 18 at least, and hopefully gets some minutes. But, you know, we're just going to have to operate under the premise that DeSantis is going to ease him back in slowly. So I don't foresee much changes with the front three. We're not going to see Cameron Habibula make his first start. That's fine. He's still young. The back four, obviously, I mean, we'll talk about the back four in a few minutes, but what we could see, but there's not going to be many changes there aside from maybe, you know, a different center back like Derek Cornelius slotting in. There's not, you know, maybe a Bruno Gaspar, but for me, it has to be through the midfield. That was the biggest problem anyways. The back four wasn't the issue against Colorado, at least not as big of an issue. Obviously, the fullbacks caused a bit of problem in transition, and it is something to consider. But for the most part, the Whitecaps, yes, they gave away a lot of five alarm chances, but at the end, they conceded a goal. The Whitecaps had every chance to win the game at the other end of the pitch. If they can concede 0 or 1 goals again, you're happy with that. But for me, it starts in the midfield. And I want to see, last week we called for Patrick Metcalf to get a start. He didn't start. Fine. Mark DeSantos want to run with the Russell Tybert, Kyle Alexandre, you know, Janiel Bakayoko midfield. Fine. He tried that. No way he saw what he saw last week and decided that's good enough to trot out again. Personally, I want to see a Kyle Alexandre, Leonard Owusu, Janiel Bakayoko trio. Obviously, that's normal. We're going to have to operate under the premise that Michael Baldissimo isn't fit. And unfortunately, we're going to have to operate under the premise that Leonard Owusu isn't quite fit to start either. With that, screw it. What do you have to lose by putting in Patrick Metcalf for Russell Tybert at this point? Just because it's as a coach, you're supposed to react to what you saw in the game prior. And I just can't, you saw what you saw against Colorado. You're playing a Montreal team that plays very similarly. No way you can chart out the same midfield group and expect to win. So for me, the one big change that I'd want to see and the one thing I'd like to see explored, heck, throw in a Patrick Metcalf in there as a midfield. I don't care if it's as an eight or if he has to play more of a six and allow Kyle Alexander to go forward, or if you see Kyle take the Baldissimo role and let Patrick Metcalf roam. But screw it, at that point, you have nothing to lose. At least you're giving a young, you know, minutes to one of your younger kids who's worked hard and who deserves a shot in Patrick Metcalf, because I just cannot, you know, if you saw what you saw last week from the midfield, one game of that was enough.
Well, you already know I'm all aboard the Pat Metcalf train, but I'll certainly believe it when I see it.
That's it.
It's in terms of him getting a starting spot.
Yeah, it's a bit of a, you know, a bit of a hope, let's say. It's a little Hail Mary, we'll call it.
So I don't want to spend too much time on the midfield, yeah, because, I mean, we've already talked about it in depth, but I do want to talk a little bit about the piece you put out in terms of Andy Rose's role defensively, some of the underlying numbers, some of the things he's done really well so far this year. And just get into that a little bit, because I think it's worth talking about as a guy who maybe wasn't coming into the year expecting a whole lot either from himself or the team wasn't necessarily anticipating using him in such a key way.
We'll talk about the center backs, because obviously Eric Godoy, his fitness is something.
At least he's back at training in some respect, which is positive.
Yeah. So either way, he's getting handled with, you know, the biggest of baby gloves and then some, and that's fine. He's a $2 million investment. He's got, you know, he's got paper calves, paper hamstrings, etc. You don't want to stretch that right now. You want him to get back to full fitness. That's fine. So under that, you have to operate under the fact that it's Ranko Veselinovic, Derek Cornelius, and Andy Rose. And, you know, naturally you'd think, okay, Derek Cornelius and Ranko Veselinovic. But as I mentioned on the show last week, Ranko Veselinovic just hasn't really been all that good last 2 weeks. You mentioned as well, struggles with space. Whoever's on that right side just has to work so much harder. So it's been having, you know, a bit of an impact on Jake Nowinski. And when you dive into the numbers about Andy Rose, it actually strikes me how good he's been this year. Through three games, obviously small sample size, but on American Soccer Analysis, goals added stat, it's a quite complex stat, but it's basically a stat that looks at, it's a way to judge defenders and midfielders and forwards, how much do they help their team create more chances. So basically it's, you know, through, for center backs, okay, if a center back defends well, naturally it helps your team score. It's a way to quantify all of that. Andy Rose right now is heading into this match day is the third best center back in all of MLS in terms of goals added on a Whitecaps team that doesn't create many chances. So for whatever reason, obviously it helps that he's a set piece threat. It obviously helps that, you know, he's not necessarily a progressor of the ball, so to speak, but for whatever reason on the numbers, and that's just one way of looking at it. On a Football Reference, for example, Andy Rose over the last year, some of his closest statistical comparables in MLS are Walker Zimmerman, Mark McKenzie, Rito Ziegler, Omar Gonzalez, good center backs. Like for a guy who's only been recently converted to center back, that's good. On one hand, you have to understand your limitations with Rose. He can't really pass a ball, say, the same way that a guy like Eric Godoy can. That's fine. You know, that's a bit of limits, but you do get a lot of offense off of him on set pieces. You get a lot of solidity at the back. When you're looking at what Ranko Veselinovic brings, you know, say you're taking a guy out of the lineup like Russell Tybert, you know, Rose, as much as, you know, as if that can be a hockey cliche, he fills some of that leadership. He brings some of that leadership. I think looking to for this Saturday's game, it might be time to consider a Derek Cornelius, Andy Rose partnership, but I don't know. I don't know if that's too hot, but I think it might be time to dive into that.
Oh, I mean, I think we're going to keep calling for it until we see it happen. Like to see Derek Cornelius get back into the lineup, and you know, you got to get him fully match fit at some point, so no time like the present. But that kind of does it, I guess, in terms of lineup discussion, where we'll get into our actual starting lineup predictions in just a moment here. But one press conference note from this week that we wanted to touch on first, and that was Mark Dos Santos's comments on, I guess this would have been Wednesday? Yes, Wednesday. I had to think about that for a moment. And it started out as just a normal Wednesday press conference, previewing the matchup for the weekend. Nothing really crazy going on. But Mark Dos Santos very quickly got into his VAR tirade and specifically, you know, a public calling out of Alan Chapman in terms of not fully explicitly suggesting it, but saying essentially that Alan Chapman has some sort of vendetta against the Whitecaps and that, you know, he didn't think that the calling back of the penalty fell within the scope of VAR and, you know, complained about the way VAR was used earlier in the match as well in terms of the red card, and maybe felt like Alan Chapman put the official in a position where he had to overturn the second time VAR was used. It was all very surprising to hear it come up in a press conference 3 days after a match. Like, it's one thing if it happens, you know, immediately in the follow-up, you kind of understand that emotions are running high. But to have it happen so long after the match was over was very, very strange. And I guess just for my two cents, I don't really understand the protests behind the penalty being called back. I mean, good on Caio Alessandre for trying to create something in the box, but it was very, very clear, at least as far as I'm concerned. And I don't think I saw a lot of argument on Twitter that Caio essentially dragged down the defender. Like, he was going to ground well before there was any foul committed. So I can't say I disagree with the call. And I just think it's a strange tact from Mark Dos Santos to, you know, decide that's a campaign he wants to start 3 days after a match. But Alex, your thoughts on the whole situation?
Well, the thing is, I still haven't rewatched the incident enough to comment on it. I mean, personally, I just think there needs to be a changing of rules in the box just because there's already way too many hands up. And I think just Kyle, like you mentioned, it probably upon first viewing, it's hard to call it a stone cold penalty. It was very questionable. And I think there's more of an issue that players in general just need to put their damn hands down in the box and just make the rules clear about that, because there's too much rugby going on anyways. But as mentioned, not really a penalty upon first viewing. Could be a shout, whatever. I mean, had, you know, the fact that it got called back, it was far from the, you know, the worst decision the Whitecaps have ever seen. That's why it was so surprising to see Mark Dos Santos so irate. I mean, I guess maybe it was due to the fact that they needed a penalty like that so badly because they weren't playing all that good offensively, and maybe they just needed that sort of lifeline and he just didn't get it. But I just look back at some of the decisions they faced. That was far from the worst one. Like, I think about Corey Baird getting supposedly taken down and Jake Nowinski didn't hit him. VAR was in that game and VAR was like, nope, we don't see anything. I think back to, you know, again, another Jake Nowinski penalty where I'm pretty sure he didn't touch the guy. You look back at Eric Godoy, you know, barely touching a guy, getting a red card. You got Andy Rose getting a soft second yellow. Those sorts of decisions, I would, you know, I'd fully be behind Mark Dos Santos going irate, you know, protecting his team, etc. But I just didn't think this was the time to eat a fine like this to protect his team, because it's not like a stone cold error that robbed the Whitecaps, because, you know, even heck, if they get that penalty, like, big deal, they score, it's 1-1, it's not going to change the fortunes of their season. This just wasn't it for in terms of timing. In terms of him being fired up, I'm all for him being fired up, I'm all for him, you know, letting his thoughts be known. But I just feel like, frankly, it's almost 2 years too late. I think 2019 March, when Corey Baird dives and the Whitecaps lose a valuable, you know, at the time it was 0-0, lost, those were a chance to win 3 points that they lost because of some dubious officiating. Not in this game. This game, again, like you mentioned, the call was a lot closer anyways. There was no, you know, it wasn't an obvious error like, say, Corey Baird diving. It was just so strange, really. It was just so strange 3 days after the match. It was so strange to single out one referee. Because the thing is, when you know, when you're making a call out like this, it's going to affect your team. Referees are naturally going to want to go after your team. And had they been screwed over by a call, that's fine. You take that risk. At least you're putting it in their mind. Like, if a referee's made a mistake and they get called out for it, subconsciously, they're going to want to reward you. When a referee doesn't really make a mistake and you call them out, they're going to hate you. And unfortunately for the Whitecaps, they've tried to go all in on the poker. It was, you know, wrong time, and it could affect them negatively now. I don't think the Whitecaps already were struggling to get close calls. This could affect the refereeing. This just was so weirdly timed, I'd say.
Yeah, and I think what really sticks with me from this is that it massively distracts from the actual point of that match, was that the Whitecaps didn't play well enough. They didn't create enough chances, and You didn't spend any time talking about that in the press conference. Three times, Mark Dos Santos went back to the officiating rather than speaking about either the match that went by or the match coming up. And I just, that mentality has to reverberate through the locker room where you're wasting more time complaining about decisions than preparing for the match at hand or you know, focusing on what you can improve on. So I just don't think that's the right attitude. I think it's wasted energy and it doesn't really reflect super well on the club, the manager or the players. Like it's not something you want to be wasting your time with, especially early in the season. I mean, I think you got to focus more on the things you can control. And if it becomes a repetitive problem as the season goes on and you're confident in the way you're playing, but you just need to, you know, make sure the officiating isn't screwing you over, for lack of a better term, then okay, dive into that. But for now, you just got to focus on getting your guys playing the way you want to play. And we didn't see that against Colorado. So to me, that has to be the foremost issue to address.
Well, call out the problems you've had in the past. That's the thing I don't get. Like, there's been genuine missed calls against the Whitecaps where he's been like, I don't want to talk about it. I don't want to get fined. Well, why are you willing to waste the fine over this one? Like, there's just so many better times for it. That's it. Like, I'm all for a good official. You know, if you want to be, because as a coach, sometimes in these press conferences, you got to use it as a chance to defend your players. Right now, they didn't really need a chance to defend themselves. You know, it wasn't like they went and played a good, honest, hard 110% of their game and got robbed by an officiating. You know, as I said, it would have given them a lifeline that, frankly, they might not have deserved at that point of the game. And I don't think if as a coach, you want to be rewarding your players and going out and sticking out your neck for them after a performance like that. If anything, you might want to hang them out to dry a bit and be like, I think we weren't up to our standard. We need to be better. We need to do this. It was just so strange. And maybe it's some sort of big galaxy brain chess versus checkers, mind games, you know, et cetera, ploy from Dos Santos to deflect and get his team fired up. But it was just it's the timing really for me that was strange. And also just the incident itself wasn't really much to break the bank, so to speak, over. But I guess Dos Santos doesn't want to get, I mean, it's a pandemic, so it's not like his kids were getting a Disney vacation anytime soon, but certainly he doesn't mind us costing them one for the near future.
And without fully getting into it, I mean, just to summarize the last couple of press conferences we've witnessed, you know, we had a conversation about players earning it and specifically Theo Bear earning it on the weekend. And then midweek, we're making excuses about why the match didn't go their way and not focusing on individual performance. That just frustrated me. But moving on from that, yeah, I don't want to spend any more time. I feel like we've gone over this enough. I want to talk about the starting lineup predictions and, you know, what a challenge that might be given the injuries, given the tactical challenges. This is going to be a tough one to predict. So we also should consider that this is a 3 matches in 8 days scenario where you've got a midweek fixture upcoming. You've got a fixture the next weekend, you know, looking at Saturday at noon against CF Montreal, looking at Wednesday at 6 p.m. against the very, very in tough and struggling Minnesota United, and then Sunday against Sporting Kansas City. So, you know, despite the fact that both KC and Minnesota have struggled so far this year, those are good teams, and the Whitecaps are going to need, you know, as close to a full squad as possible for those matches. But given that, where do you think the Whitecaps go lineup? Do we see squad rotation? Do we see them trot out a pretty similar lineup and save some of that rotation for Wednesday? What do you think, Alex?
What's that? How do you handle rotation? Because there needs to be rotation in the squad. Like,
it's not going to be the same starting 11 for all three of these matches. Like, there's just no way.
Well, it's just, if we're going to go back to the first 3 games of the season, you've used the lineup, same lineup, essentially 3 times. There's 1 or 2 tweaks here because of the injury, or, you know, like Michael Baldissimo came in for Leonard Owusu at the start of the season, and they ran the same lineup, and then they brought in Kyle Alexander for Michael Baldissimo. Aside from that, it's been the same lineup, 10 out of 11 players in each game. You need to make changes after that last loss. So I want to see changes for the Montreal game, but like, how do you try to take advantage of a struggling Minnesota and load up on some of your, so to speak, an A lineup? But do the Whitecaps even have an A lineup right now with all their injuries? Probably not. And obviously you don't want to get battered away from home from Sportis Kansas or Minnesota. So I do wonder if they're going to go as fireworks as possible for Montreal, because they're playing quote unquote, at home against a team like Montreal that can be a little more defensive. And then maybe they'll try to play for the draw on the road in one of the two games. I could see them going for it against Minnesota, then maybe trying to play for a draw against Kansas, which, you know, to be fair, considering some of the scores they've had in the past playing against Kansas, some six nil, or, you know, I remember obviously, maybe it's not the worst thing to play a bit defensively and go for a draw against Kansas if your lineup's tired, if it's depleted. So I would just say focus one game at a time and go from there. I think you have save Michael Baldissimo and Leonard Owusu for Montreal, save them for Minnesota. If they're not fully fit, maybe we get an Eric Godoy in one of these three games off of the bench. Heck, maybe even a start. Personally, for the Montreal game, since we'll focus on that, I'd say obviously keep Crepo in goal for now. It's Montreal. He's playing his former team. Like, keep him in. You put Derek Cornelius and Andy Rose. Personally, I just think take out Ranko Veselinovich. He needs a rest. Keep Christian Gutierrez. I'd say put Bruno Gaspar in. Screw it. Really shake up the team. Maybe if that doesn't happen, we see Bruno Gaspar against Minnesota. Fine. That's okay. In midfield, I think we're going to see Janio Bickel. I think we're going to see Kyle Alexander. We're going to see Russell Tybert. I want to see Patrick Metcalf in for Russell Tybert. But if we're going to have to make predictions, though, you know, I have to go for the safe pick. And then obviously, I don't think we're going to see any changes for the front three. But then I think that opens up avenues for the Minnesota game. I think Thomas Hasall could slot in. I think if Ranko Veselinovich rests, for an example, or Derek Cornelius, if he stays out, one of them, whoever rests is coming in against Minnesota. DeSantos kind of hinted at that when asked about Andy Rose's play. I think at right back, whoever didn't play against Montreal, ditto. I think we see Baldissimo Owusu come in, and then maybe we see a change in the front three, but I just don't know for who. A Ryan Raposo, maybe a Theo Bear, but that's kind of what I see going on.
Yeah, I really wonder if they're going to make any changes for this matchup against Montreal. I could, because of the injuries to Owusu and Baldissimo, I can see them going with the same lineup, trying to make some minor tweaks against Montreal, and then you bring in Baldy and Owusu, you bring in Gaspar, you bring in Derek Cornelius, depending on how Max is feeling, maybe Thomas Hasall starts. I could see, you know, 5-6 changes against Minnesota. Then you have those two matches, one with the current lineup, one with a bunch of changes, and you try to go somewhere in the middle for the matchup against Sporting Kansas City. That's, if I'm trying to get inside Mark DeSantis' head, that's kind of the way you'd go with things. If everyone was fully fit, you know, be that an Eric Godoy, be that Baldy, be that Owusu, I could see more squad rotation for this matchup against Montreal, but I think just based on all the factors, it kind of feels like Minnesota is going to be the one where they really switch things up. So I'm predicting no alterations to the squad other than tactical for this matchup against Montreal.
Bold. That's all.
In some ways, very boring and not bold at all. But in another way, kind of bold.
You're reading Mark DeSantos well. I could see that from him. But the thing is with Mark DeSantos, he'll ride with the lineup for a few weeks, and then all of a sudden he'll pull changes out. So is
it going to happen Montreal on the weekend, or is it going to happen midweek? We just don't know.
That's it. We don't know. For all we know, we're going to come out tomorrow and have 7 changes from the lineup and, you know, all this. It's Mark DeSantos. He's, you know, as we've said with this whole MLS VAR comments, like, he's an unpredictable guy. So who knows what's going to happen on Saturday.
All right. Well, I think that takes us into one of the final segments of the show. Before we get to our final score predictions, it's time to look at the stock market, and we have some investments to make, some reviewing of the portfolio to do heading into Saturday's matchup. So, Alex, why don't you kind of lay the groundwork, and we'll kick things off here.
Well, we went into our review last show, basically after good weeks and week two. Sam had 6 actions. I had 4. We didn't do so well this week. I got a hit with the -1. Sam got hit with the -1. We only have 2 things to do this week each. So not much to do, really. You know, that puts me in a bit of a risky position because I've got some interesting investments on the board here. So we each have 2 that can either, if we sell something, that's an action. If we buy something, that's an action. Can buy 2 shares in one thing. So Sam, I'm curious what you have to do with your 2 actions.
Yeah, I've gone from last week with my 6 actions, I was ultra aggressive, making lots of investments, diversifying the portfolio, Maybe I'm being a little bit reactionary, but I'm going kind of opposite this week. So to just make get everyone up to speed, I have 3 shares in Dahomey, 2 shares in Baldy, 2 shares in Caicedo, 1 share in Goody, and 1 share in Whitecaps offensive set pieces. I like those investments, but I don't feel ready to double down or invest any further in those stocks right now. So actually, I'm making 1 sale, and then I'm holding with my other. So I'm not even going to use the second action. I'm just going to kind of round things out. I'm going to sell a Dahomey share because I doubt the Whitecaps' ability to really provide the service he needs in this matchup or for them to do enough to break down Montreal. So I'm going down to 2 Dahomey shares, and I'm going to pass with my second action. I just don't think this isn't going to be a massively, you know, a big boom match for the Whitecaps. So I don't want to be investing too heavily. I like the investments I've made, but I'm it's kind of a wait and see week for me.
Yeah, well, that's good. It's interesting. You're going to go cautious. I have 1 defensive set piece, which, to be fair, did okay for me last week, besides the fact that Colorado scored that free kick.
Yeah, I was a bit unlucky.
Yeah, so I have 1 Gutierrez share, 1 Kyle Alexandre share, 1 Cavallini share, 1 Baldissimo share. I don't think I'm selling any of my shares. I'm spending 1 share to bring in Max Crepo, you know, against his former team. He's been in good form. I think it's time for me to bring in 1 share in Max Crepo and then the other share. At this point, I guess, like, I don't know if I want to risk it. I'm like trying to think on something I could risk a share on at this point. And there's so many individual shares you can buy into. So I think ultimately I'm actually, you know what? I'm going to buy very low on this. I'm going to buy 1 Cameron Habibula share while I'm here. It's very early, but I liked what I saw from him off of the bench. May as well, you know, Mark DeSantis appears to like him. That's my other action this week. And then we're going to keep it quiet, and then hopefully I have more than 2 actions next week. Hopefully by the time of next episode, I'm rolling in money and muleta to throw around.
I like the investment in Cam because it doesn't really feel like that. You can't lose in that one, right?
I'm
like
buying early Apple.
You're buying
stocks
in at the floor, at the base level. You're a founding partner of that company, right, with your 1 share. So I like that. That's a good choice.
Yeah, well, we'll see how it pays off. I mean, may as well. It's smart for you to hold because, again, the more investments you buy, the more chance you have at risk. And, hey, if Cam doesn't play tomorrow, that's a net negative or a loss for me. You know, who knows what's going to happen. So it's obviously a risk, but that's the name of the game, baby. That's the name of the game. We're here, the people in the raging 20s, if we're going to go on a bit of a history level, they weren't thinking about risk when they were throwing stocks all over the place. So I'm going to, you know, it's the raging 20s now, 2021. I'm going to be channel my inner Great Gatsby and throw money all over the shop today.
Yeah, I like it. You've got a lot of investments in a lot of places. So we'll have to see how that pans out for you. Well, without further ado, time for score predictions. We've teased it quite a bit throughout the show, but I'm ready to hear what we have to think about this match. Who wants to kick it off?
Well, did we review our score predictions from last game yet, or did we
not? No, we have not, and I will bring those up. Just give me a moment here.
Yeah, well, obviously, this week we, you know.
Spoiler alert, we didn't pick up any points last week.
Yeah, no, I'm pretty sure I picked a win, so that's just a wash, and I'm pretty sure you picked up a win as well or something. We both picked wins.
And shout out to the Guess the Starting 11 contest for 86 Forever. I think there were 16 entries for match predictions. All 16 picked a Whitecaps win, so no one got the prediction.
Yeah, you
correct
predicted that. You predicted that was going to happen. You said that.
To review, I picked a 2-1 Whitecaps victory.
Oh boy.
You picked a 3-2 Whitecaps victory.
I went for that.
Needless to say, not super successful. So
shout out to Rachel Vigil from last week. She came in with a 1-0 Colorado win. Looks like a genius. So hopefully, she put some money down on that, but yeah.
So well, I'll kick it off then.
Yeah, for, you're leading off Montreal this prediction week, since you already got your prediction locked down.
Okay, well, yeah, I'm gonna keep it simple. First of all, I want to just say I was a little surprised by Hattie's prediction going opposite and picking against his own team. I like that. I like the confidence. He seems to, you know, feel like he has a good pulse for the matchup, but I have to disagree. The Whitecaps are going to drop their second match in a row. They're going to drop it 1-0. I have bad feelings about this match. I also really like the way Montreal has been playing. I don't feel like this is a good matchup for the Whitecaps. I got to be honest, if Michael Baldissimo was fully fit, I'd be thinking very differently about this matchup. But just given the current state of the midfield, given Kyle still getting up to full speed, given Bruno Gaspar potentially not being ready to start just yet, I think the Montreal takes this one.
That's not, I mean, it's not that bold. I think Montreal, that's a fair shot to back them to go keep their undefeated run. I, you know, personally, it feels weird to predict another Whitecaps win just because in MLS, you can never predict the same result back to back. You can never, if a team loses 1-0, you can't, it's hard for me to back them 1-0. That's bold. If the Whitecaps lose again 1-0, fair play. Like, we're going to have to revolutionize the Whitecaps offense if they're getting shut out again. But I'm going to go 2-1 Whitecaps win just because I foresee some losses next week away from home. They've had all week to train. They're at home. They're against Montreal, who, for example, just to give you an idea of where Montreal's at, today, Thursday, they had to cut training short after a half hour because it was 35 degrees weather and they couldn't train. Like, you know, it's going to – I just do wonder if playing in altitude in Utah in the cold, how much of a gut punch that is going to be. I'm going to go 2-1 Whitecaps. Maybe I'm overthinking. Maybe I'll look like a genius. But fear not. If you're thinking I'm being a little too positive considering the last result, yes, I am, but I foresee some good losses in the future. So my mood will probably change next week unless the Whitecaps win 5-0 and look fantastic. So I guess we'll have to, again, it's easy to go captain hindsight and look back like, oh, what was I thinking, predicting a 3-2 Whitecaps win over the Rapids? But that's the beauty of the show. We got to put our reputations on the line, and you guys got to laugh at our bold takes after the fact.
I like it. It's gonna be fun to watch this one, not only for the predictions but also just a lot of the storylines going on. So I have to say, I think that's a pretty comprehensive coverage of everything going into this all Canadian matchup. And before we sign off here, just want to shout out, as per usual, 86 Forever YouTube. We will be doing a live show 11 a.m. Saturday morning, getting you ready for the Whitecaps matchup. Looking forward to that. Looking forward to seeing some of you guys on the stream. And yeah, we'll talk about some of these talking points. We'll add some new stuff. Producer Ben is going to be back. We've got a couple little goodies for the intro. I've made my own little video intro that's going to go in it. So check that one out. And yeah, Alex, over to you before we sign off here.
Yeah, well, just thanks to everyone for listening to the Third Sub podcast presented by Macy's Sports. Shout out again to Macy's Sports for everything that they've been doing for us. If you haven't entered our giveaway to win a Whitecaps Wave jersey, if you haven't, like, this is a free chance to win a Whitecaps Wave jersey. Enter on Twitter or Instagram. But big thanks to them for all the support. And shout out to the live show. It'll be also on Twitter. I've been sent back down to the Third Sub 2 team. I got called up to produce last week's show. I did, you know, adequate to good, I hope. And then we got the big boss back, the star, Ben, producer Ben. No one can beat producer Ben. We're proud to have him on the show with us. So shout out to that. You can find me on Twitter at Alex Gongerusic, at BTS Fan City, BTSFanCity.com. Putting out all sorts of content, like, is Andy Rose one of the best defenders in MLS? We don't even realize it. Maybe, if you want to learn more, read that article. But that'll be one amongst many that will be on the website over the next few days, obviously. That's already on the website. So check that all out. Thanks for your support. If you like the show, leave a review. Appreciate it. It means a lot to us. We've loved the support lately. And on that note, I'll let Sam close things off.
Yeah, you can find me, as always, at Samuel_Rowboat on Twitter, at 86forever.com. You can find our podcast at The Third Sub on Instagram and at Third Sub Pod on Twitter. Have to make sure to get those right. And yeah, already plugged the live show, so YouTube and or our, all of our Twitter accounts, you can find that on the weekend. And thanks for listening, everyone. Thanks to Hattie as well. We'll be back again soon.